Hello. Thank you for tuning in. You are listening to ByteRadio.me's Bringing Inspiration to Earth show. For network or show information, visit www.ByteRadio.me or call 843-808-0777. And now, the Bringing Inspiration to Earth show with your host, Robert Sharp. Good day, everyone, and thank you for joining us for this edition of the Bringing Inspiration to Earth show. Today, my special guest is Brian C. Wilson, author of the new book, John E. Fetzer and the Quest for the New Age. Brian Wilson is a professor of American religious history in the Department of Comparative Religion at Western Michigan University, WMU. It was during his years in the Peace Corps that he developed a fascination with religion, initially fueled by what he experienced of the ancient religion of the Maya and of Roman Catholicism. Returning to the U.S., Brian completed a Ph.D. in religious studies at the University of California, Santa Barbara, where he studied religion in the United States. In 1993, he co-authored a book on new religious movements in California. After moving to WMU, Brian wrote an award-winning book on serial inventor and the leading Seventh-day Adventist of his time, Dr. John Harvey Kellogg. Based on the success of that book, the Fetzer Institute invited Brian to write a full-length spiritual biography of its founder, John E. Fetzer. The Kalamazoo-based Fetzer was a radio pioneer, media mogul, and longtime owner of the Detroit Tigers baseball team. Of his many pursuits, however, there is one that is not well known, his lifelong spiritual search, which led him from traditional Christianity to an exploration of a variety of metaphysical religions, culminating in the New Age. In many ways, the story of John Fetzer's long spiritual search mirrors that of many Americans who sought new ways of thinking and being in the evolving metaphysical religions of the 20th century. In John E. Fetzer, The Quest for the New Age, Brian not only explores the evolution of Fetzer's beliefs, but how he put them into action by permanently endowing three funds that will foster research into the scientific/spiritual interface for years to come and help cultivate a more peaceful, loving, and inclusive world founded on the principle that we are all connected through one infinite force. Brian's book is available from Amazon.com, and I do have a direct link to his book there in the show page description. So with that, I'd like to welcome Brian to the show. Good day, sir.
Good day. Glad to be here.
Thank you very much. And boy, I had no idea who John Fetzer was, and I love the book, especially years ago I got a National Spiritualist newspaper that was kind of handed to me from the 20s and 30s, and I had no idea how rich in, you know, search was for spirituality during that time, but it seems like John Fetzer was right in the middle of it.
That's right. He tapped right into it. Ever since he started as a Seventh-day Adventist, and then he left the tradition and dove into a wide variety of metaphysical traditions. And this was in the 1930s. And he basically kept exploring until he passed away in 1991.
Yeah, it's amazing. So for the listeners who may not know, would you kind of maybe just give a high-level view of exactly who John E. Fetzer was?
Sure. John Fetzer was born and raised in Indiana and eventually moved to Michigan. And he was born in 1901. And as a child, he became very interested in the new technology of radio And at a certain point, he was recruited to set up a new radio station. In fact, the first radio station in Southwest Michigan, at a place called Emmanuel Missionary College, which was a Seventh-day Adventist institution. And eventually he bought that radio license and moved to Kalamazoo, Michigan, and started a radio station there. And from there, he parlayed it into a kind of media empire. He got into TV and cable, and eventually he bought the Detroit Tigers and was their owner for 30 years. So he was a very, very successful businessman. And by the time he passed away, he had been listed as one of the 400 richest Americans by Forbes magazine. But for me, what I'm really interested in the book is that parallel to his business success, he was also a very committed spiritual seeker. And he had this whole other life that, in fact, very few except his closest colleagues knew that he was cultivating.
Wow. You know, it's amazing. And I bet he would be shocked at the state of radio now from when he first started.
Yeah. Well, in the beginning, go ahead.
Go ahead. Uh-huh. No, you please.
Well, I was just going to say that in the beginning, he basically did it all. He was the programmer, the engineer, the on-air talent, the booker. He did everything. So, he started in the days of very primitive radio, and it evolved during his lifetime. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. So what was he like as a person? I mean, you know, obviously business, you know, and that spiritual side, but just as a person in general, how would people describe him?
Well, from the accounts of, I never unfortunately had a chance to meet him since he passed away in 91, and I actually didn't get to Kalamazoo until 96. But his friends and family and colleagues talk about him as a very complex man and in some ways a very private man, but always very concerned for others and very concerned for the power of wealth, what he could do with his money. And for him, it was all about mission. It wasn't about making the money. It was all about what you do with it. So he always had this kind of larger vision, and his businesses were always kind of a means to an end. He loved to explore. He was an inveterate reader. He loved to talk to spiritual people across the spectrum. So he remained very engaged and curious up until the day he died.
Wow. So for him, you know, the wealth was kind of just a means to do good. I mean, it seems like he had really in his heart, he seemed to, you know, the welfare of people seemed to be utmost, really, where his desire was.
Yeah. He always had this idea that he was on a mission, and he believed in reincarnation, and he believed that he had actually gone through multiple lives, and that each one of his previous lives had actually been preparing him for this larger kind of mission to the world. And so the thing that fascinated me about John Fetzer was that not only did he undergo this spiritual search and create this spiritual worldview, but by the end of his life, he basically liquidated most of his businesses, all of his businesses, and use that to endow a foundation to basically carry on the spiritual vision for the future. And that's the Fetzer Institute. And I think that is the real mark of his success, both as a businessman and as a spiritual seeker, is that he, in the end, used his millions essentially to create an institution that would outlive him and further the kind of spiritual vision he had.
Yeah. So what led him, or what kind of got him on this path of inquiry? I mean, you know, obviously coming from Seventh-day Adventist, you know, to, you know, metaphysics and reincarnation, all that kind of thing is a little bit of a, you know, circuitous type of journey that one might take.
Oh, very definitely, very definitely. Yeah, he his mother converted to Seventh-day Adventism when he was a teenager, and he basically followed her into the church. And he was very committed until his late 20s. And for him, it gave him a number of opportunities, gave him an opportunity to get into radio and buy the radio station and also get an education. But by his late 20s, he was really kind of chafing at the strictness and kind of narrowness of the tradition. So he left, and one of the first things he did is he headed south into Indiana, and he went to a place called Camp Chesterfield. And Camp Chesterfield is a spiritualist camp, and it's one of the, it's still around today, still thriving. It's one of three spiritualist camps in the United States. There's one in Florida and one in upstate New York called Lilydale, and then Camp Chesterfield. And there, Fetzer was absolutely intrigued. He met mediums, he met mystics, he learned all sorts of divination techniques. He was exposed to, you know, things like astrology and tarot cards and Ouija board and all this kind of stuff. But I think what appealed to him was that he always had the mind of an engineer, and he was always thinking about what's the relationship between the kind of energies that he dealt with as a radio engineer and the larger kind of spiritual energies that circulate throughout the universe. And he really felt that there was some kind of connection between empirical energies like radio waves and subtle energies. And so he always had this idea that religion and science really should be harmonized. And I think when he started exploring things like spiritualism and other metaphysical movements, he really found in that a way of kind of reconciling spirituality and science.
Yeah, so, I mean, because right now there's, I mean, even though it's narrowing, but there's always been that conflict, you know, between science and religion, or science and spirituality. And, you know, to have someone recognize that, you know, they're not necessarily in conflict is, I mean, that's a major step. But it, it also had to have been kind of a unique perspective, you know, for him. And, you know, as far as during that particular time period, you know, I mean, there were obviously great scientific advances, you know, but you also have the spiritual side. So it seems that, you know, in a way he was kind of ahead of his time marrying the two.
Oh, I think so. I think so. I mean, there were some great scientists out there like Einstein who always had a kind of spiritual approach to their work. But, you know, the 20th century was really the kind of heyday of secularized science, of a kind of very materialistic focus. And for Fetzer, it was not only the technology of radio, but also the wonder and mystery of radio that got him thinking along these lines, that there just had to be a connection between science and spirituality. And he really believed that if human beings were going to advance, if we were going to evolve to a higher level of consciousness, then spirituality and science had to be harmonized. And in fact, a spiritualized science was necessary for humanity's greater kind of growth of consciousness.
Yeah, very much. And by the way, that Camp Chesterfield, I loved that spirit photograph that you have in the book.
Oh, yes.
From Camp Chesterfield. That's amazing.
Well, John Fetzer was always very interested in genealogy. And I think part of it had to do with the fact that his father died when John was two or three, and he really never knew his father. So doing the genealogy of his father's family was a way of kind of getting in touch and getting to know his father. But I think also, since he believed in reincarnation, this idea of tracing lives back into the past had a spiritual component to him. The problem was when he started doing the genealogies in the 1940s, was we didn't have things like Ancestry.com out there where all the you know, information is at your fingertips. Yeah. And so he really had to search, and he had to travel, and he had to go to archives and go to city halls and things like that. And occasionally he would run into roadblocks. He just couldn't find his way forward. And he claimed that either through the mediums of Camp Chesterfield or through the Ouija board, he could develop new leads that would lead him to information to fill in the blanks of his genealogies. And what the spirit photographs are about is at a certain point, there was a medium at Camp Chesterfield who specialized in spirit photographs. And the idea was that through the seance, you could actually imprint images of your dear departed on a photographic, I guess it was a paper at that time, photographic paper. And then when you develop it, then these are going to be people that are connected to your past. And John Fetzer identified some of those figures as some of his ancestors. And in fact, line drawings taken from those photographs appear in both his genealogies. So he really was very interested in kind of the ability of the mediums to help him on his genealogical search.
Yeah. So what were some of the metaphysical, you mentioned a couple of metaphysical kinds of traditions,
mm-hmm.
but what were some of them that John Fetzer was most interested in?
Well, the thing about Camp Chesterfield was that they also had a bookstore, a kind of metaphysical bookstore. And so John Fetzer said that every time he went down there, and he went there well into the 1970s, that he would always come back with a handful of books or, an armful of books. And one of the traditions he got very interested in was theosophy. And theosophy begins in the 19th century with a medium named Helena Blavatsky and a Civil War colonel named Henry Steele Olcott. They got together and created an organization that was really designed to harmonize Western esoteric thought with Hinduism and Buddhism. And this is a tradition that basically took off and ramified into all sorts of different branches. And so John Fetzer was fascinated with not only theosophy proper, but also things like the Arcane School, which was a theosophical group, is a theosophical group based on the channelings of Alice Bailey. He was also interested in a Chicago-based group called the I Am Religious Activity. And so theosophy was one of the keys here. And the thing that theosophy gave him was this idea that channelers could actually access the wisdom of ascended masters or higher beings. And this is something that Fetzer believed until the day he died. And this was tremendously important for him. And he always had access to a channeler or a psychic who could advise him along these lines. In addition to that, he was very involved in Freemasonry and eventually became a 33rd degree Scottish Rite Mason. Out of that, he accessed other traditions like Rosicrucianism and Hermeticism. So these are Western esoteric traditions that have a long history and a very kind of deep and rich cosmology, which he was fascinated with. So those were some of the traditions. And then later in life, he got very interested in the Urantia book, which is another channeled document, and A Course in Miracles. He was one of the first people to read A Course in Miracles. And that became kind of a cornerstone for his practice, especially in the 70s and 80s. So there's just a wide variety. And I'm just kind of scratching the surface of the kinds of things that he was involved in. Yeah.
Wow. Very diverse, you know, and as far as channelers, it's kind of interesting because I have my touch and go kind of experience with people who are channelers, you know, and it seems that I think I read in the book there was one time he kind of mentioned about You know, when it comes to mediums and tarot and other types of divination things, that, you know, sometimes there were, like, he seemed to have a very discerning, you know, perspective, and sometimes that they were coming through with information he felt was good, and other times that they weren't really up to speed.
Yeah, I think he prided himself on, as he said, being able to spot the phonies. And I think he would have agreed that he probably encountered more phonies than genuine people, genuine psychics. So he didn't take all this stuff in uncritically. He always filtered it through his, you know, his own intuition and according to his values as well. So if there was stuff coming through that just didn't fit, he was more than happy to reject it. He just didn't accept everything uncritically. Yeah.
Yeah,
I think what this I think what this did for him was it gave him a great deal of confidence, and confidence in the decisions he was making, because he believed to a certain degree he himself was psychic, although not powerfully psychic, and he felt that his intuition, especially in business, was a kind of extrasensory perception. So he felt that, you know, he also had his abilities that he could bring to bear on discerning whether the information he was getting was legitimate or not.
It seemed like that. Now, what was his belief with regard to the connection between, you know, body, mind, spirit, and health and well-being?
Well, he was convinced that, you know, you couldn't have a healthy body without a healthy mind. And this was another tradition he was very interested in that goes back to the 19th century. And it variously goes under the title of New Thought, or sometimes you'll hear other designations. It's the tradition out of which we get, like, Christian Science and the Unity Church. And the whole idea is that the mind, to some degree, has power over the material world, over the world as we know it. And so Fetzer really believed that the mind held tremendous potential in controlling and healing the body. And so he felt that health and well-being was not simply based on our biology, although he always accepted that and was always, you know, interested. He always accepted biomedicine. He never rejected that in favor of strictly this mental approach. But he felt that, you know, we had to look at this holistically, and that the body really was, the mind and the body were really one, and they were held together by spirit, and they basically had to be in harmony for us to enjoy not only physical health but also mental health. So he was very early on believed in this real important close connection that we'd call holistic today. He didn't use the term until later in life, he was one of the pioneers, I think, in terms of promoting these kinds of ideas.
Yeah, very much. I mean, it is, you know, the hot topic now, you know, for sure.
Oh, yes.
So now you mentioned his belief in reincarnation. So how do you feel that, or from what you studied, that belief impacted his life? I mean, was that maybe setting up that foundation and recognizing it going on part of that? Or
I believe that, because he actively tried to trace his past lives, either by using a Ouija board or by consulting psychics. And so, quite frankly, he believed he had a chain of past lives that went all the way back to Atlantis. And he felt that in each one of his lives, he had a mission to carry out. And these past lives had only been partial successes in carrying out this mission. And the mission essentially was to promote global spiritual transformation. And so he felt that the past lives were tremendously important in giving him kind of the wisdom and experience that would be necessary to do it right in this life. And so when he set up the Fetzer Institute and saw that it had a firm foundation and it would survive him, I think he was tremendously proud of that because this was the capstone, not only of this life's mission, but all his life's missions. And the other thing is he believed in something called collective or group reincarnation. So he felt that the people who gravitated around him and who understood him had all also participated in his past lives, and he had participated in theirs. So at some level, he believed that his closest confidants, the people he really trusted, had some kind of psychic bond that transcended, you know, the material and transcended to some degree time. And this was tremendously important for him to be able to take advice and to work with groups on creating the initial kind of mission for the Fetzer Institute.
Yeah, that, I mean, that's amazing because, I mean, you know, the idea of, first of all, the idea of reincarnation for some people is just, I mean, even though probably the majority of the world's religions believe in it, there are certain segments that, you know, can't grasp it. But the idea even of a group reincarnation would even kind of, you know, get some people's minds kind of, you know, wondering. But I've you know, felt in so many people that I've talked to, intuitive people that I've talked to, that I would rate as, you know, legitimate connection type of people, that that group reincarnation is, you know, it's real, and it's one of those things where, you know, to me then it really makes one's life and path kind of just a part of a whole, part of a bigger something, you know, and I think a lot of people could use that perspective. I mean, it would be beneficial to have that perspective.
Well, I think for some, I mean, it helps to give you a sense of meaning in the sense that it's not all a big accident. We're not all just thrown together accidentally, but there's some kind of larger purpose at work. And I think for a lot of people, and definitely for John Fetzer, this was a very comforting notion. And it was also a way of you know, creating and maintaining community, which for him was tremendously important. He was this private guy. He was very compartmentalized in terms of his business and his spiritual pursuits, but community remained tremendously important to him. And so he wasn't always out there and he wasn't always in the headlines. In fact, he avoided that, but he did need his kind of close-knit group. And in fact, in the 1980s, he had something called the Monday Night Group, which was kind of the culmination of all his kind of spiritual circles, which was tremendously influential in forming the overall mission of the Fetzer Institute.
Wow. Well, Brian, we're about halfway through the show, so I want to take just a quick break, and I do want to invite listeners, if you would like to call in and ask any questions, you can dial in at 619-789-4359. And for those listening live in the chat room, feel free to pose any questions. And then when we come back, I'd like to kind of start to focus on the business side of John Fetzer and how it all kind of fits in. Okay?
Sure.
Okay, great. Everyone stay tuned. We'll be right back after this very brief break.
Hello, this is Robert Sharp. I want to thank you for joining us and hope you are enjoying today's show. Just a reminder that we have a wealth of information and resources available on our website, www.biteradio.me. There is a calendar of upcoming shows, along with an archive link that will give you access to more than 1,200 shows we have had over the past 7 years. Also on the site are links to the products and services we provide, books, greeting cards, photography, and a wellness store. Our show is available as a free podcast on iTunes, and you can subscribe for free at the iTunes Store, or even quicker, there is a link on our website homepage. We are also on many social media platforms, Facebook, Twitter, LinkedIn, etc., and we also have buttons to those platforms on the top of our homepage. Our website, www.biteradio.me, has much for you to explore and enjoy. I also very much appreciate you supporting our guests, and especially today's guest. And now, back to the show.
Okay, everyone, thank you for staying with us. Again, today, my very special guest is Dr. Brian C. Wilson, and we're talking about his book, John E. Fetzer and the Quest for the New Age. And again, his book is available at Amazon.com, and I do have a direct link to his book there in the show page description. And for all of my metaphysical folks listening out there, this is a definite buy. Buy it and read it. It's a really fascinating book. So, Brian, thanks for staying with me.
My pleasure.
Okay. So, before you kind of go into the business, you know, you mentioned about him being, kind of reserved, staying out of the limelight, focus on community. Do you feel that that was because maybe his spiritual search may have been in conflict with some of those? I mean, why do you think that he kept it quiet for so long?
Well, I think part of it was his character. I think he was a private person, and so he felt more comfortable exploring these things in private. But the other thing was he was in a new medium, radio, and he basically was living and working in a part of the country that tended to be, and still is, fairly conservative religiously, Western Michigan. And so he was always concerned that his spiritual beliefs might be misunderstood, and that might cost him in terms of either his audience or his advertisers. So he was always concerned about how his spiritual beliefs would be perceived and the impact they would have on his business. And I think that's one of the major reasons why it wasn't until late in life, when he was in his 70s and 80s, and he was beginning to basically liquidate his businesses, that he basically came out more publicly with his metaphysical beliefs. So I think that's the primary reason why he was very quiet, very circumspect about his metaphysical beliefs.
Yeah, and that's still very true today. I mean, that's a lot of folks, are in the spiritual closet when it comes to some of their, their beliefs or their curiosities. How did his spirituality, do you feel, help him become a business success? How did, because right now, for years it's been the focus on business and bottom line. Now it's starting to shift a little bit more towards values. But how did Fetzer feel about that?
Well, I in terms of how his metaphysical beliefs helped him in building his business, I think it. One of the things it did was it just gave him a great deal of confidence. As I mentioned, he really believed that his intuition, not only making business decisions, but also importantly about, who he hired and who he basically had around him, was a form of ESP. And so by believing that, I think, again, it gave him confidence in his decision-making. Occasionally, he would also use divination devices to make business decisions, including the Ouija board, and he also used to carry a pendulum. And the pendulum was just simply a plumb bob. It was a weight on the end of a string. And this fit with his idea of this belief in mind over matter. And essentially, the way he'd use it is if he had a business decision or a personal decision that he wasn't quite sure of. He was leaning perhaps in one way or the other, but he would pull out the pendulum and through a series of kind of yes-no questions, depending on the way it deflected, it might help him make a decision and then feel more confident about it afterwards. So he did employ his spiritual beliefs in his businesses, although, again, he was always very concerned about overtly introducing these things into his business. He did occasionally, a couple of times, with the baseball team, which is kind of interesting. In the 1970s, he became a practitioner of transcendental meditation, and he really loved the practice. And he got to know the Maharishi Yogi and, in fact, advised the Maharishi on how to basically use American media and American television to get his message across. And he was so taken with the practice of the meditation that he introduced it to the baseball team, to the Detroit Tigers. In spring training, I think it was 74, he offered classes in transcendental meditation to the ballplayers that were interested. Now, again, he never imposed it. He never required it or anything like that. It was completely voluntary. But some of the players actually took it up and found it very useful in improving their game. So occasionally he would kind of interject these things. But again, he was very careful about that. But the other thing about businesses was, go ahead.
Mm-hmm. No, I was going to say, well, but at least, I mean, he was very conscious of, not imposing, those beliefs and just, recognizing, people's choice.
Yeah, he always said, the term he used was freedom of the spirit. And he really believed that people had the right to follow whatever spiritual path they wished to. Now, ultimately, he was kind of a perennialist. He believed that all spiritual paths led to the same thing. But he thought it was tremendously important that everybody follow the path they're on because they intuitively know what's the right path for them. So, yes, he was very careful not to impose his beliefs on other people, and he was very tolerant and accepting of other people's beliefs as well.
Well, that's a sign of someone who is just very, very aware, and mm-hmm. So now were there any other ideas that he used, when it came to the Detroit Tigers, or was that a TM one primarily the only one?
Well, there's another wonderful story about a specific baseball player, a guy named Mark the Bird Fidrich. And he was a very talented pitcher for the Detroit Tigers. And he was very popular because when he pitched, he had a very singular kind of style on the mound. And he would talk to the baseball, and he had all sorts of interesting kind of eccentric rituals that he went through. And he became a very good pitcher, but the problem was the sports writers started making fun of him, and he became very self-conscious to the point where he'd fallen into a slump.
Mm.
And so Fetzer took him into his office, and together Fetzer pulled out his pendulum. And in this case, it wasn't to make any decisions, but he showed Fidrich that you can move the pendulum using your mind, or that's what Fetzer believed. And so together they spent some time concentrating on the pendulum to see if they could make it move. And Fidrich in his memoir said, yes, he did manage to make it move, and the lesson there was that the mind does have power over matter. And Fetzer convinced him that his pitching style, talking to the baseball and all the little rituals were essentially Fidrich's way of basically using his mind to get the pitch he wanted. And Fidrich said after that, he lost his self-confidence and came out of his slump. So here's an example of using the pendulum in this case on a specific ball player.
That's fascinating, and the idea of ritual and even talking to the baseball. I mean,
uh-huh.
when it comes to energy and and everything being energy, that's some people would say eccentric, but then some mm-hmm. Who believe in the connection of everything would think that that's just a very valid and worthwhile endeavor.
Yeah, at the very least, it's a form of mindfulness. It's a way of really concentrating on the activity you're involved in. And even if there's, not a psychic component, which Fetzer did, and mm-hmm. I think Fidrich came to believe, it can only help you be more, efficient and talented in whatever you do.
Exactly. So A few times during the show, you've mentioned the Fetzer Foundation. So can you tell us a little bit about it, its origins, and its mission?
Sure. During the 1950s, John Fetzer created a foundation, which he didn't do too much with until the 1970s. And at that point, he decided he was really going to focus on developing his foundation. And the idea was that the foundation would always be focused on spiritual transformation in order to catalyze global spiritual transformation. And during the early days, during the 1970s, when John Fetzer was really putting more energy and time into the foundation, the original projects they funded were largely parapsychology, because John Fetzer was absolutely fascinated by parapsychology. And he felt that that was probably the best chance of basically harmonizing science and spirituality. And so they supported all sorts of interesting programs in psychokinesis and clairvoyance and remote viewing and things like this. At the end of the 1970s, John Fetzer felt that the research was not really advancing the way he would have liked. He felt that it really wasn't proving what he wanted it to prove. And so he shifted the focus of the Fetzer Institute, or the Fetzer Foundation at that time, in the 1980s to looking at mind-body health and holistic health. And especially, John Fetzer was fascinated with energy medicine. So using the energy sheaths of the body, sometimes he talked in terms of chakras and chi or prana energy, in terms of developing technologies that could actually measure and use those ethereal energies to diagnose and cure disease. So that became one of the real foci of the Fetzer Foundation during the 1980s. And then once he passed away, when he passed away in 1991, go ahead.
No, no, I just think that, you know, that it was fascinating that he, you know, really created this organization, you know, to look at, you know, look at these topics and, you know, even that shift, you know, that it wasn't kind of showing what, you know, he wanted, you know, to shift it. It seemed that, you know, in energy medicine, would be a much more personal, it would show more benefits personally for people than the other types of research.
Yes, I think a variety of things came into play here. I mean, part of it was simply that he was becoming quite elderly and he was experiencing health problems of his own. But I think you're exactly right that he saw that the parapsychological research not only was it not advancing, but it really remained in the realm of the very kind of abstract and technical, and most people wouldn't have access to the research. But if you could come up with energy medicine healing, energy healing rather, or technology for energy healing, then you could actually turn this into a product that would benefit a large number of individuals, and he felt would actually revolutionize medicine. So it was interesting the various things he funded during the 1980s. He had been interested in biofeedback for a long time and, in fact, started funding biofeedback projects in the 1970s. And then he got involved with something called the ARE Clinic, the Association for Research and Enlightenment, the foundation of Edgar Cayce.
Edgar Cayce, yeah.
And they had a, still do, they have a clinic in Arizona that was basically trying to test the various remedies that Cayce came up with in his readings. And some of that was energy medicine, and other things were like the use of castor oil packs and various alternative treatments. So Fetzer was really very, very interested in these approaches.
Yeah, you know, when we were talking about, you know, him going to mediums and in that time period and his belief in a life in Atlantis, I mean, Edgar Casey just popped right into my head thinking, you know, that is like right in sync with the information that he was bringing through.
Yes, I mean, Fetzer remained a reader of Casey for decades, and he was fascinated by, well, Casey, I mean, talked about all sorts of things, but the two kinds of subjects that Fetzer was really interested in was the readings about Atlantis, and he found that fascinating, but also the health readings, the readings that had to do with alternative medicine. And again, I think he saw medicine as a very practical way of proving the reality of spirit and marrying science and spirituality.
Yeah, very much. I mean, it's, you know, if you could, you know, get that energy to impact your health and well-being, you know, people are going to kind of sit up and take notice. It's like, okay, if that works, I'm going to go for it. You know, and a lot of people, you know, especially later in life who experience issues, you know, that becomes obviously a higher priority.
Yep. Yeah, it becomes much more immediate. It isn't something, you know, hypothetical for the future. Yeah, you have to deal with it right now. Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. So now that was the Fetzer Foundation. So now how does that differ from the John Fetzer Memorial Trust in the Institute? I mean, are these three different entities?
Well, they're related because just before John Fetzer passed away, he changed the name of his foundation to the Fetzer Institute. And part of this was to reflect not only that they were going to fund research, but they were also going to fund education as well. So not only did they want to, you know, do the science or do the programs, but they also wanted to come up with ways of educating the public in these things. So the Fetzer Foundation morphed into the Fetzer Institute, and the Fetzer Institute still is thriving to this day. Its mission has shifted somewhat. And then another organization within the Fetzer Institute that John Fetzer created just before he died was the Fetzer Memorial Trust. And that has kind of two missions today. Primarily, it's to preserve the legacy of John Fetzer. So it's doing all sorts of programs to basically, like, digitize his archives and things like this and make it available to the public. And, of course, my book, Johnny Fetzer and the Quest for the New Age, also comes out of this legacy program. And then the Memorial Trust also has something called the Franklin Fetzer Fund, rather, and it's designed to really give grants to cutting-edge science and primarily holistic approaches to physics and biology. And this is pretty high-level stuff that, you know, it deals with, for example, the nature of consciousness and how it impacts the way we do science and the way we basically look at the world. So this is very kind of interesting high-level research.
Wow. Amazing. It's wonderful that there are those organizations are set up to do that, because it really is the next frontier, you know, really in recognizing and embracing that. So now, what led you to John Fetzer? What, I mean, you know, now, did you know about him kind of sort of before you started? I mean, we did say in the beginning that, you know, after your book, you were approached. But did you know about him?
I did. John Fetzer, actually, I teach at Western Michigan University. And John Fetzer, during his day, was a very generous donor to the university. There's a building on campus with his name. And he also was gave the seed money for our holistic health program. So it would be difficult to be in Kalamazoo and not know about, to some extent, John Fetzer. Yeah. And the Fetzer Institute is actually, during Fetzer's life, during his last decade, they built a beautiful campus on the edge of town. and a beautiful administration building that is just a real interesting architectural gem that incorporates all sorts of interesting kind of esoteric and spiritual symbols. So I knew about that, and I had actually taken a tour through the building years ago. But I had no idea until I actually started researching, getting into the archives, just how deep his kind of metaphysical quest went. And so this book, for me, I'm a professor of American religious history in a comparative religion department, and I focus primarily on new religious movements, and I'm especially interested in new religious movements here in the Midwest. So John Fetzer was just right up my alley, and it turned out to be just a wonderful, wonderful project to do.
Yeah, it seems like it. Now, I read one of the reviews that talked about, and I think it was one of the Fetzer folks who in their review indicated that it was a well-documented, well-researched, and I have to say, I mean, over 100 pages of notes, you know, at the back of the book,
yep.
That's a lot of research.
Well, I was lucky because the university gave me a year sabbatical, and I was able to actually go out to the Fetzer Institute and just simply spend every day working in the archives and writing the manuscript. So it was a wonderful experience for me, and it really allowed me to pretty well look at just about all the pertinent documents. And the interesting thing about John Fetzer is he kept everything. So we have information, we have documents going back to his childhood. And so what's unique about this biography is that it charts his spiritual search and the creation of his worldview, but our sources are so rich that I can give a great deal of detail. So I think anybody who reads it will not only learn a whole lot about John Fetzer, but also about the history of metaphysical movements in the United States.
Yeah, I agree. And the resources that you provide at the end of the book, you know, for people who really want to explore further, I mean, that's mm-hmm. that's just a treasure trove that you listed there. So I guess, you know, in closing, is there any final words or anything you would want to say to the listeners that we didn't cover about John Fetzer, or maybe what you've learned or what the readers would learn from reading the book?
Well, I guess I would simply say that John Fetzer is a fascinating guy, not only for his spiritual search, but for the fact that, you know, he maintained it for his entire life. Even in his last years, he had this just intense curiosity about things spiritual and things metaphysical. And I think this is one of the reasons why, you know, he kept happy and young in spirit all the way up until the end. And, you know, I hope that's – I'm the same way when I get to that point, that I still have that kind of energy and curiosity. So he's a remarkable figure in that regard. And I think readers will really hopefully find it inspiring.
It is. You know, it is. You know, and, you know, there is a lot to be learned, not only from his experience, but things that we can incorporate into our lives. So – Well, Brian,
yeah,
I really
yeah.
want to thank you for your time today. This has really been great. You know, it's like I said
Fantastic.
To all of my metaphysical listeners out there, which are the majority, that this is one of those books that I know that they would enjoy. So thank you
Fantastic.
For your time today.
Can I mention just a couple of websites?
Absolutely. Please do. And go ahead, please.
If the listeners want to learn more about the Fetzer Institute, they can go to fetzer.org. Or if they want to learn more about the Memorial Trust and the Fetzer book, they can go to infinitepotential.com. And there they can download a free PDF of the preface and first chapter of the book.
Okay, infinitepotential.com.
That's correct.
And the Fetzer.org about the organization. Okay, I will be sure
That's
by
correct.
The end of the once the show closes that those links will be available in the show page description, as well as the link to your book on Amazon, so that people can
Fantastic.
Find it readily. Okay, well, thank you, Brian. Again, I really enjoyed our conversation today.
Thank you. I've enjoyed it too.
Great. Thank you again, everyone. Today, my very special guest has been Dr. Brian C. Wilson, and we've been talking about his new book, John E. Fetzer and the Quest for the New Age. Again, like I said, there's a link to his book available at Amazon.com in the show page description, and you can find out more about the Fetzer organization by visiting Fetzer.org, and also more about the book at infinitepotential.com. And everyone, I want to thank you for joining us for this edition of the Bringing Inspiration to Earth show. And until we meet again,
thank you for tuning in. You've been listening to the Bringing Inspiration to Earth show. Be sure to visit our website at www.biteradio.me. That's biteradio.me. You can also find us on Facebook and Twitter at Byte Radio Me, and our shows are also available as a free podcast from iTunes. And until we meet again, remember to be a bright light by bringing inspiration to your world and to the lives of those you touch.